In 2016, the absolute smartest political analysts in the world, I mean, heavyweights with decades of experience, they promised us that global politics was about to snap back to normal like a rubber band.
Right.
They went on television, they wrote these exhaustive editorial columns, and they basically staked their entire professional reputations on the idea that the chaos we were seeing was just, you know, a temporary fever, a blip.
Yeah, a total anomaly.
Exactly. And today, we have the official scorecard proving just how monumentally, almost unbelievably wrong they actually were.
It's a profound lesson in how deeply even the experts can completely misunderstand the ground they're standing on.
Oh, absolutely.
Because predictive analysis, especially when you're standing in the middle of a historical hurricane, it's notorious for its blind spots. I mean, what's fascinating here is how human societies actually evolve versus how we think they will.
Which is exactly why today's deep dive is such a massive, necessary reality check for all of us.
Mm.
I mean, have you ever wondered if the sheer chaos of the last decade or so was just a temporary glitch in the system or a permanent structural change to the world order?
It's the question, really.
All right. So today, we are going to give you the answer. We're opening up a truly fascinating document. It's called the Dossier Trump 2015 to 2029, and we are zeroing in specifically on Chapter 17.
And what makes Chapter 17 so unique is, well, its function. It acts as this overarching historical scorecard.
Yeah.
The creators of this dossier, they didn't just want to recount a dry timeline of what happened. They went back and gathered the major predictions made by historians, economists, journalists, policy analysts between 2015 and 2029.
And held them up to the harsh light of reality.
Exactly, just to see what actually came true.
Now, before we jump into the grades on this scorecard, I want to quickly acknowledge our source material for you. The text notes this dossier is a uniquely curated project. It was compiled with the assistance of AI, which is explicitly noted in the text, and it's meant to take a really heavy, chaotic era and distill it in a light, accessible way that anyone can understand.
Right. It's designed to make sense of the noise. For all ages, really.
Yeah. But we also need to establish a critical ground rule for our deep dive today.
We really do.
Because the period from 2015 to 2029 was, by any metric, intensely polarized. I mean, there are incredibly strong feelings on all sides of the political spectrum.
Absolutely.
So we want to explicitly remind you, the listener, that throughout this entire discussion, we are impartially reporting the historical analysis exactly as it is laid out in this dossier.
We are not taking any political sides here.
None at all. We are not endorsing right-wing or left-wing viewpoints. We are merely conveying the findings, the scorecard of predictions versus outcomes as they're presented in the source material.
Perfectly said. We are literally just the messengers of the scorecard today.
Okay. Let's unpack this. To understand the entire 15-year era, the dossier says we have to start at the epicenter, the political earthquake that defined it, Donald Trump.
Yeah, the foundational debate of the era. I mean, everything stems from how society interpreted his arrival on the political stage.
Right. So let's look at prediction number one on the scorecard. Back in 2015 and 2016, a vast number of analysts predicted that the Trump phenomenon would be a temporary political anomaly.
Mm-hmm.
The prevailing expectation was that he was this exceptional, highly localized event. The thought process was, you know, once his time in office ended, politics would just revert back to its previous polite, quote unquote, normal state.
And the dossier grades this prediction very clearly, mostly
incorrect. Wow.
Yeah. And it's crucial to understand why they were wrong. The analysts who predicted he was just a passing phase fundamentally misunderstood the mechanics of what was fueling his rise.
How so?
Well, they viewed him solely as an individual disruptor, like a rogue agent,
yeah,
rather than a manifestation of much deeper societal currents.
Okay, so the analysis treated him like a passing thunderstorm. You know, you batten down the hatches, you wait for the rain to stop, and then you step outside, dry off, and go back to normal life.
Right.
But what the dossier is saying is that he wasn't a thunderstorm, he was a geyser.
I like that. Let's refine that analogy, actually, because it's a really good start.
Okay.
A thunderstorm comes from above, right? It's an external weather event that passes over you. A geyser is driven by massive subterranean pressure that has been building up over a long period of time.
Right. It's underground.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The pressure underground was already there, boiling away for years. He was just the water breaking the surface.
So what exactly was that underground pressure made of? Because, I mean, you don't get a geyser without tectonic friction.
The dossier explicitly outlines those core trends, that tectonic friction. It lists a deep systemic distrust of elites. It lists widespread, highly potent criticism of globalization. It points to deeply complex and emotionally charged immigration issues, severe cultural polarization, and a rapidly growing skepticism toward traditional institutions.
So these were not new issues in 2015.
Not at all, but they had reached a boiling point.
Let's talk about the mechanism behind that, specifically the globalization criticism, because for decades, the bipartisan consensus in Washington was that globalization was universally good.
Oh, universally.
Right. Free trade agreements, offshoring manufacturing to places where labor was cheaper. This was just seen as the inevitable march of progress.
But the reality on the ground was drastically different for a huge portion of the population. I mean, when a factory leaves a town in the Midwest, it doesn't just take jobs.
No.
It takes the tax base, it hollows out the local economy, and it leaves a profound sense of abandonment.
And the people living through that reality felt entirely ignored by the coastal political and economic elites who were, you know, benefiting from cheaper consumer goods.
Exactly. That is the pressure. And the dossier's analysis is that Trump didn't invent that feeling of abandonment. He harnessed it.
He just tapped right into it.
He gave it a highly visible, incredibly vocal platform.
Which means the pressure didn't just vent and dissipate. It permanently altered the landscape. And I guess that leads directly into prediction number two.
Yes.
The prediction was that the Republican Party model would permanently change as a result of this era.
And on the scorecard, this receives a solid green checkmark.
Correct.
Correct.
How?
The dossier notes a visible, structural, and permanent shift in the party's DNA.
What did that shift actually look like on a policy level? Because the dossier lists the permanent fixtures, right?
It does.
It says America First policies became the unquestioned ideological baseline. We saw a massive pivot toward economic nationalism, which, as we just discussed, was a complete 180-degree departure from the party's previous decades of free trade orthodoxy.
The total reversal.
Right. Strict migration control became a paramount, overriding priority, and populist rhetoric moved from the fringes right into the mainstream center.
And this is a monumental historical shift. Think about the mechanics of how political parties usually operate. They're massive, slow-moving, heavily entrenched corporate entities, in a way.
Yeah, they don't turn on a dime.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The conventional wisdom, the prediction, was that the traditional Republican establishment would eventually absorb and neutralize the populist wing, the adults in the room theory.
Right. The idea was, you know, let the populist wing yell for a bit, give them a few symbolic victories, but the party machinery will ultimately stay the exact same.
Precisely. But the scorecard shows the absolute opposite happened.
The populist wing didn't just challenge the establishment.
No, they conducted a hostile takeover and became the new establishment. It proves that political movements, if they genuinely tap into those deep geyser pressures, can completely rewrite the foundational platform of a major political party. It wasn't just a change in leadership. It was a fundamental realignment of what the party actually stood for.
It's incredible how quickly what was considered a fringe, rebellious faction became the absolute center of gravity.
It really is.
So if the politics within the party were getting this extreme, this polarized, and if the rhetoric was entirely rewriting the rules, the natural question is, how did the actual house hold up?
Right. Did the walls start to crack?
Exactly. Which brings us to the next major theme of the dossier, the stress test of American institutions.
And this is a vital transition, because when political rhetoric escalates to the point of challenging the fundamental rules of the game, it is the underlying institutions, you know, the courts, the election boards, the legislatures, that have to absorb that shock.
Right. So let's look at prediction number three, which deals directly with the core of the democratic process. The prediction was that debates over elections would continue to be a major ongoing issue.
Graded as correct.
Unsurprisingly.
Right. The dossier points out that trust in elections and relentless debates over electoral integrity remained a recurring dominant theme throughout the entire 2015 to 2029 period.
I mean, it felt like we couldn't go a single week without a major national headline about voting procedures, mail-in ballots, changes to election laws, or debates over ballot harvesting.
Oh, it's constant.
It wasn't just something people argued about in November every 4 years. It became a permanent daily fixture of the political discourse.
And we have to look at the mechanism of why that happens. This ties directly back to the institutional skepticism we mentioned earlier.
Okay, right.
When a significant portion of the population loses trust in the overarching system, the very mechanics of how power is transferred become intensely contested.
Every little thing is scrutinized.
Exactly. Every procedural change, every local election board decision is suddenly viewed through a highly polarized lens. The prediction that this debate would not just fade away after one contested cycle was entirely accurate, because the underlying lack of trust hadn't been resolved at all.
But here is where we get a massive plot twist in the narrative of this era.
Oh, definitely.
Let's look at prediction number four. There was a very vocal, very widespread prediction, especially prominent in the media, on podcasts, and among certain political commentators, that American institutions would completely collapse under this pressure.
Yes.
That the stress test would end in a catastrophic terminal failure of the Republic's machinery.
And here, the dossier provides a definitive, perhaps surprising verdict. Incorrect.
Okay, I have to push back on this a little bit on behalf of anyone who was doom scrolling through those years.
Fair enough.
Because for a lot of people, if you were reading the news or living on social media, it absolutely felt like things were collapsing. You had riots, contested elections, unprecedented political vitriol. It felt like the sky was falling on a daily basis.
It was a very dark mood.
So how do we square that very real feeling of apocalyptic dread with the dossier's calm analysis that the prediction was just wrong?
Well, it is a crucial distinction that the dossier makes between political atmosphere and institutional mechanics.
Okay.
You are right. The atmosphere was apocalyptic. But the dossier provides contextual reassurance by looking at the machinery. It states that despite heavy, intense political tensions, the core institutions continued to function.
Like what?
It specifically highlights the courts, the state governments, the thousands of local election organizations, and the Congress. They remained active.
But wait, let me challenge that. You say the courts acted as shock absorbers, but weren't the courts themselves viewed as highly partisan by a large chunk of the public by 2025?
Yes, absolutely.
So if the public doesn't trust the shock absorber, hasn't the institution still failed conceptually?
That is an excellent philosophical question. But the dossier is looking at mechanical reality, functionality versus perception. Did the courts stop issuing rulings?
No.
Were those rulings, even the highly controversial ones, ultimately adhered to by the executive and legislative branches?
Yes, they were.
Right. The state governments continued to administer highly complex elections under extreme scrutiny. Congress, despite the extreme polarization and occasional highly publicized dysfunction, continued to pass budgets, legislate, and hold hearings.
So the plumbing held.
Exactly. The pipes were rattling incredibly loudly. They were stressed to their maximum engineered capacity, but they did not burst.
That is a wild way to think about it.
And the new insight here is paramount. Institutional resilience proved to be much stronger than the pessimistic, apocalyptic scenarios predicted. The system was designed to handle deep factionalism, and it did exactly what it was designed to do. It processed the conflict rather than collapsing under it.
That is deeply fascinating. The noise of the political culture blinded us to the quiet, stubborn durability of the actual machinery.
Yes.
And again, to maintain our strict impartiality here, as requested by the source material, and as a reminder to you listening, the dossier isn't saying the institutions were perfect or that the outcomes they produced were favored by everyone. Far from it.
Not at all.
It's simply stating, as a matter of historical record, that they did not undergo a total systemic collapse.
Which perfectly transitions into prediction number five, looking at one of those specific institutions that continued to function and shape the era, the courts.
Right.
The prediction was that judicial appointments would have long-term consequences.
Graded, correct. And this is perhaps one of the most enduring, tangible legacies of this entire 14-year span.
The dossier specifically highlights the Supreme Court in section 17.9 of the text. It points out that decisions made during this era on massive generation-defining issues confirmed this prediction.
Like the rulings on the legality of abortion, the scope of presidential powers, the extent of federal regulatory power.
Exactly.
So explain the mechanism here for us. Why do judicial appointments matter so much more than, say, a highly contested congressional seat?
Because judicial appointments are the ultimate long game in American politics.
Yeah.
A president serves for four, maybe 8 years. A member of the House faces re-election every 2 years. But federal judges and Supreme Court justices are appointed for life.
For life.
When an administration appoints dozens of federal judges and multiple Supreme Court justices, they are projecting their legal philosophy decades into the future.
It's like planting a political oak tree.
Exactly. The dossier notes that these appointments lock in influence for decades. While political majorities in Congress might swing back and forth with the cultural mood every few years, the judicial branch, provides a stabilizing or, depending on your political perspective, a frustratingly entrenched ideological anchor.
It is the ultimate example of actions in the present casting a very, very long shadow into the future.
Right.
So we've looked at the domestic shock absorbers. We've seen how the internal American system handled the America First shift and the immense cultural pressure. But now we have to pull the camera back.
Yes, time to look globally.
How did this domestic political earthquake in the U.S. impact the rest of the globe? This brings us to a fascinating segment of the dossier, the geopolitical paradox, NATO, Ukraine, and Europe.
And this is where predictive analysis truly meets the chaotic, unpredictable reality of world events.
Oh, man. Let's start with prediction number 6, that NATO would severely weaken.
Right.
During the early part of this era, with the U.S. aggressively questioning its alliances, complaining about European defense spending, focusing inward on economic nationalism, many experts thought the transatlantic alliance was on its absolute deathbed.
And the dossier grades this as partially correct. And it is a deeply fascinating partially.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because if you read the first half of the dossier's analysis, it sounds like the prediction was dead on.
It really does.
It says tensions arose over defense spending, strategic dependencies, and transatlantic relations. There were real, palpable fractures. The U.S. was demanding Europe pay up, and Europe was terrified that the American security umbrella was being basically folded away.
Yes, the diplomatic friction was very real. The America First posture naturally led to a highly transactional view of alliances. Washington was essentially asking, what is the return on investment for American taxpayers to defend Europe?
Which terrified European capitals.
Absolutely. They had grown completely accustomed to unconditional American protection since the end of World War II.
But then reality intervened in the most brutal way possible.
The great paradox of the era. The dossier explains that the war in Ukraine paradoxically strengthened and even expanded NATO.
Wow.
Just when the alliance was arguably at its political weakest, it was handed an undergraded correct.
Yeah.
But the true depth of those consequences is what the dossier really emphasizes. The text notes that the war influenced not just the immediate battlefields, but global energy policies, defense strategies, massive geopolitical alliances, and international trade routes.
Let's drill down into the how of that, because the ripple effects were absolute tsunamis. Take the energy policy aspect.
What's fascinating here is the text's specific new insight. The consequences proved to be vastly larger and more long-lasting than many experts expected in 2022.
Yeah.
Initially, there might have been a hope in Western capitals for a localized conflict or a swift diplomatic resolution. Instead, it became a massive geopolitical pivot point.
I want to look at the staggering math of Germany during this time because it illustrates exactly what the dossier means by long-lasting consequences. Germany, the largest economy in Europe, built its entire industrial model on the assumption of cheap, uninterrupted pipeline gas from Russia. They used it to manufacture chemicals, cars, heavy machinery. When the war started and those pipelines were eventually shut down, Germany faced a mathematical impossibility.
Right. You can't run a factory on good intentions.
Exactly. You can't just run a massive chemical plant without fuel. They had to completely rewire their energy grid, build liquid natural gas terminals in a matter of months, and source energy from entirely different continents at a massive premium.
Which forced a complete painful decoupling of European energy from Russia, which rewired global energy markets basically overnight. It was an economic shockwave that caused inflation globally.
And alongside that economic shockwave came a military one, which brings us to prediction number 8. The prediction was that Europe would take more responsibility for its own security.
Rated correct. And the dossier actually calls this out as one of the most accurate geopolitical predictions of the entire 14-year period.
Think about it. For decades, American presidents, not just Trump, but Obama, Bush, all of them, had been complaining about Europe not paying its fair share for defense.
Right.
They were leaning on the U.S. taxpayer. And suddenly, boom, it happens. The dossier lists the tangible proof. Massive, sudden investments in actual defense capabilities, the emergency ramping up of ammunition production, and this overarching, desperate push for what they started calling strategic autonomy.
Let's define strategic autonomy for a moment, because it became a major buzzword in this era.
Good idea.
It essentially means Europe realizing it needs the industrial and military capacity to defend its own interests without relying entirely on the United States coming to the rescue.
It was a brutal awakening.
A very brutal one. The combination of an American political sphere that was increasingly skeptical of foreign entanglements, coupled with a literal hot war involving tanks and artillery on their own continent, left European leaders with absolutely no other choice. The comfortable inertia of the post-Cold War era was completely shattered.
They realized they couldn't just outsource their safety anymore?
No.
And as this map is being rapidly redrawn, we get to prediction number 9, which is quite specific and really interesting. The prediction was that Canada would become strategically more important to Europe.
Also graded. Correct.
Yay.
While the U.S. was undergoing its severe domestic political volatility, Canada presented a very different profile on the world stage.
The text says Canada evolved into one of the most stable and reliable democratic partners for Europe. They heavily collaborated on energy, critical raw materials, defense, and trade.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about the mechanics of it, it makes perfect sense. If Europe is frantically trying to decouple from unreliable authoritarian regimes for their energy and minerals, because remember, you need vast amounts of critical minerals for modern defense and green tech.
Right, you need a lot of it.
Right. And simultaneously, they are somewhat wary of the political roller coaster in Washington. Where do they look? They look north.
Exactly. Canada is incredibly resource rich. It is fundamentally democratic, and its political system, while it obviously has its own debates, was significantly more stable during this period.
Mm.
It is a natural strategic realignment.
Mm.
It demonstrates how mid-sized powers can gain massive strategic leverage when the great power dynamics become volatile.
But what about the great power that sparked this specific geopolitical crisis? Prediction number 10, Russia would become internationally isolated.
This one is graded as partially correct.
Hmm.
And the nuance in that partially is absolutely vital for understanding how the modern world actually functions.
Let's unpack that. The dossier breaks down a very stark geographical divide.
Yeah.
Within the West, meaning North America, Europe, parts of allied Asia like Japan and South Korea, the isolation was near absolute.
Complete.
Severe financial sanctions, massive diplomatic expulsions, trade embargoes, airspace closures. If you only looked at the world from a Western perspective, you would think the prediction was 100% correct. Russia looked entirely cut off.
However, the dossier points out that simultaneously, many other countries simply ignored the Western sanctions and continued to cooperate with Russia.
Yeah.
It specifically lists China, India, parts of Africa, and parts of the Middle East.
Which, if you look at a globe, is a massive chunk of the global population and economy. I mean, India was buying Russian oil at a discount, refining it, and sometimes even selling those refined products back to the West.
Exactly. And this raises an incredibly important question about the very definition of the word international.
How so?
Well, for a long time, in Washington, London, and Brussels, international isolation essentially meant being cut off from the West. The assumption was that the West was the international community.
Right, the center of the universe.
But this era proved that a nation can be entirely cut off from the Western financial system and still find highly lucrative, supportive economic lifelines in Beijing, New Delhi, and beyond.
Wow.
It highlights a fundamental fracturing of the global community into distinct, sometimes competing, spheres of influence.
So if the West is frantically building a fortress, unifying its defense, but Russia is finding massive, eager markets in the global South and East, we have to ask, who actually holds the leverage now?
That's the million-dollar question.
Who controls the global economy when the world splits in half? This pivots us right into the next major theme in the dossier, the shifting balance of global power and money.
And this is where the map gets incredibly crowded.
Let's look at prediction number 11. China would become the primary geopolitical challenger to the United States.
Correct. The text is unambiguous here. China successfully continued to expand its economic, technological, and geopolitical influence across the globe.
There was never really any doubt about this one, even back in 2015, but it's important that the scorecard validates it. And how did they do it mechanically? They didn't just sit back.
No, they executed a very deliberate long-term strategy. You had the Belt and Road Initiative, where they financed massive infrastructure projects across Africa and Asia, essentially buying geopolitical loyalty.
Right.
They secured near monopolies on the rare earth minerals required for modern technology. They leveraged America's inward focus to present themselves as the new, stable partner for the developing world.
But this ties directly into a much trickier, much more debated prediction. Prediction number 12. The world becomes multipolar.
Graded. Partially correct.
Okay, unpack this for me. Why, only partially. If China is rising to near peer status and India is asserting its own massive economic gravity, isn't that the very definition of multipolar?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it's about the nuance of power distribution. Let's define the term. A multipolar world implies there are several roughly equal centers of power that balance each other out.
Okay.
The dossier clarifies that while other nations rose, the United States remained dominant in terms of absolute military projection and deep financial markets. It did not become a post-American world.
And that was a very trendy prediction among some gloomy analysts in the late 2010s. They thought the U.S. would completely collapse inward due to its domestic polarization and leave a massive global vacuum.
But they didn't. The vacuum didn't happen. However, the new insight from the text is that while the world didn't become post-American, it became less exclusively American.
How should we visualize that?
Think of a corporate boardroom. For a long time after the Cold War, the U.S. was the CEO, the chairman of the board, and held 90% of the voting shares. They could unilaterally dictate company policy.
Right.
What the dossier is saying is that the U.S. is still the CEO today. They still have the biggest office. But China, India, the BRICS nations?
Oh, let's quickly define BRICS for the listener, just so we have the terms clear.
Sure.
That's Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, plus the new nations that joined them during this era. They act as an economic bloc to counter Western dominance.
Yes. So in our boardroom analogy, those nations have acquired enough voting shares over this 15-year period to block unilateral resolutions.
I see.
They can launch hostile takeovers of regional departments. The U.S. is dominant, but it is operating in a much more crowded room where it cannot simply dictate terms as easily as it did in the 1990s.
That makes perfect sense. They still run the meeting, but people are actively yelling back at them across the table now. And speaking of the power in that boardroom, let's talk about the actual currency they're arguing over. Predictions 13 and 14 focus on the economy and the dollar.
These predictions are particularly revealing regarding how global financial markets react to political reality.
Okay. Prediction 13 was that political instability would increase economic uncertainty. Graded, correct. The dossier says companies increasingly had to take into account geopolitical risks, policy shifts, and trade tensions. I mean, we lived through this. Supply chains became national security issues overnight.
Exactly. The mechanism here is about predictability. Businesses, especially massive multinational corporations, crave predictability to make investments. When politics becomes volatile and alliances shift rapidly, that predictability vanishes.
The risk goes way up.
The cost of doing business skyrockets because you have to price in the risk of sudden trade wars, massive tariffs or sanctions, cutting off your access to key components.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just build a microchip factory anywhere in the world anymore without consulting a geopolitical strategist first to make sure that country won't be embargoed in 5 years.
Wow. But then we get to prediction 14. And this is one of my favorite parts of the scorecard.
Oh, this one is fascinating.
The prediction was that the U.S. dollar would rapidly lose its dominant position as the world reserve currency.
Graded incorrect.
You heard this constantly during those years. Every time there was a summit with the BRICS nations or a new bilateral trade deal signed where two countries agreed to trade in their local currencies instead of the dollar, there was an absolute flurry of articles predicting the immediate catastrophic death of the U.S. dollar.
Yes, there was.
But the dossier says, despite all the loud discussions about alternatives, the dollar stubbornly remained the dominant world currency.
The new insight here provides the crucial context for this phenomenon. Alternatives are growing, yes, but change in the global financial system happens much, much slower than is often predicted by political commentators.
Is it kind of like how everyone constantly complains about their computer's operating system?
What do you mean?
Like, everyone says they hate it. They want to switch to a new, better, fairer open source system.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about it on forums constantly. But when you look at the sheer mind-boggling headache of actually migrating all your files, learning new software, and making sure it's compatible with everyone else's computer, people just sigh, complain, and keep using the old system.
That is a brilliant way to look at it.
Yeah.
In economics, we call that a network effect. The dollar is the operating system of global trade.
Right.
The migration headache for the global economy doesn't just involve moving files. It involves rewriting trillions of dollars in trade contracts, completely restructuring central bank reserves, and finding a new asset that is as universally trusted, highly liquid, and backed by a transparent legal system as U.S. Treasury bonds.
Which is a tall order.
It takes more than political posturing at a summit to unseat a reserve currency. It requires a viable, fully liquid alternative, which simply didn't materialize at the apocalyptic speed predicted.
The inertia of the global financial system is stronger than the political desire to change it. Again, impartially reporting the dossier's findings here, the dollar held its ground.
It did.
So we've covered the politicians, the courts, the wars, and the money. Now we move to a section of the dossier that looks at the forces beyond human diplomacy. Because while humanity was arguing over borders and currencies, two massive non-human forces were rapidly reshaping the 2015 to 2029 era.
Nature and human invention.
Right.
The energy transition and the technological revolution. And what's fascinating is that they moved on very different timelines.
Let's look at predictions 15 and 16, which I call the energy reality check. Prediction 15, the energy transition will accelerate.
Gridded? Correct.
Yeah.
Dossier confirms that investments in solar energy, wind energy, massive battery storage, and hydrogen increased globally. The momentum was real, measurable, and historic in scale.
We saw massive leaps in green tech deployment. Entire grids started shifting. But, and this is a massive bet of prediction 16, was that fossil fuels would rapidly disappear as a result.
Graded incorrect. A very hard reality check for environmental optimists.
Why were the predictions so wrong here? If we were building so many solar panels and wind turbines, why didn't the oil wells shut down?
Because the predictive models often underestimated the entrenched reliance of the global infrastructure on high-density energy, and they severely underestimated the brutal realities of geopolitics.
Okay.
The text points out that oil and gas continue to play a crucial foundational role. Specifically, it notes that geopolitical conflicts, like the war we discussed in Ukraine, made it brutally clear that fossil energy remains completely critical for the foreseeable future.
Let's explore the mechanism of that. When we say high-density energy, we mean that a barrel of oil contains an incredibly concentrated amount of power that is easily transportable.
Exactly.
You can put it in a ship, send it across the world, and burn it to power a massive cargo ship or heat a city in winter.
Right. The dossier's new insight here is profound. The energy transition is proceeding slower and is vastly more complex than many optimistic scenarios assumed. You cannot simply flip a switch and power a heavily industrialized global economy entirely on emerging technologies overnight.
Especially when the supply chains for those new green technologies are themselves vulnerable to the same geopolitical stress.
Precisely.
If you want to build a million electric vehicle batteries, you need staggering amounts of lithium, cobalt, and copper. And who controls a massive portion of the processing for those minerals? China.
Yes.
So you are basically trading dependence on Middle Eastern oil for dependence on Chinese mineral processing.
The reality is physical. It's the difference between drawing a clean, downward-sloping graph of carbon reduction on a whiteboard in a policy meeting and the dirty, slow, massively complicated reality of actually rewiring the physical world.
Like digging new mines.
Digging new mines. Laying thousands of miles of high-voltage transmission lines, and ensuring the grid doesn't collapse on a cloudy, windless day. When the chips were down and winter was coming in Europe, idealism took a backseat to the brutal necessity of keeping the heating on. Fossil fuels remained the necessary bridge.
It's physical friction. But conversely, let's look at a transition that wasn't slow at all, because it had no physical friction. Predictions 17 and 18 focus on big tech and AI.
Here, the speed of change was breathtaking, precisely because it was unconstrained by concrete and copper.
Prediction 17. Social media would gain enormous political influence.
Graded correct. I don't think anyone alive during this era is shocked by this.
Not at all.
The dossier states these platforms played a central role in elections, news provision, and societal discussions. They essentially became the privatized public square with all the algorithmic chaos that entails.
They amplified the cultural polarization we discussed at the very beginning of this deep dive. They were the mechanism that allowed the geyser to vent so aggressively. Right. But prediction 18 is the truly transformative civilization level shift. The prediction was that artificial intelligence would fundamentally change the provision of information.
Graded. Correct. And the dossier specifically marks the year 2023 as the watershed moment.
The turning point.
It says from around 2023, it became clear that AI would have a structural impact on journalism, education, politics, and the economy.
Think about the contrast we just set up. The energy transition is painfully slow because it requires physically building massive new infrastructure. Technology, specifically generative software and AI, scales globally at the speed of light.
Yes. Once a new AI model is released onto the internet, Its impact on the global information ecosystem is almost instantaneous.
It's lightning fast. We went from AI being a neat parlor trick where it could draw a funny picture, to it structurally writing complex software code, drafting massive legal documents, generating highly targeted political advertising, and tutoring students, all in a matter of a few short years.
It completely, utterly outpaced our ability to regulate it, or even fully comprehend what it was doing to the concept of truth.
Which brings us perfectly to the core thesis of the dossier. We've seen how politics, institutions, geopolitics, economics, energy, and technology all shifted. Now, we must synthesize it.
Yes.
We've gone through the scorecard. We see what hit and what completely missed. Let's take a deep breath and look at the whole picture. What is the ultimate takeaway from this 15-year retrospective?
The dossier provides four macro lessons under its new insights section. These aren't just bullet points. They are the underlying laws of physics for how human society actually evolved during this era. I'll outline the overarching themes, and we can synthesize them.
Let's do it. What's the first law of physics here?
The first law is about the velocity of institutions. Based on everything we discussed regarding the courts, the voting systems, and the U.S. dollar, what did we learn about how structures change?
We learned that institutional changes happen far slower than expected. They are heavy. The courts absorbed the shock. The dollar maintained its network effect despite the complaints. Institutions are built to resist sudden movements, and they did exactly that.
Correct. The second law is the counterweight to that.
Mm.
If institutions are slow, what is fast? Look at the transformation of the Republican Party, the rise of populism, the shifting of what was considered acceptable political rhetoric.
Political culture. Political culture changes much faster than formal institutions. The way people talk, what they demand, and the anger they feel can pivot in a single election cycle.
Yes.
The culture is the geyser, violently erupting, while the institutions are the heavy rock sitting on top of it, taking decades to erode.
Exactly. The third law moves us to the global map. Despite the shocks of the Ukraine war, the rapid rise of China, and the tension over Taiwan, how did the actual balance of global power shift?
Gradually. Geopolitical shifts are almost always gradual. The shift toward a multipolar boardroom where the U.S. is still the CEO but others have voting shares happened in inches, not miles. There are very few true overnight revolutions in global power.
And finally, the fourth law, which we just touched on, with the contrast between energy grids and AI.
Technological changes move way faster than political adaptation.
Way faster.
The political system in Washington and Brussels is still holding hearings trying to figure out how to regulate social media algorithms from 2012, while AI in 2023 structurally rewrote the entire information landscape. Politics is always playing a desperate game of catch up to technology and usually losing.
So bringing all four of those laws together, the dossier offers a powerful synthesizing conclusion. It emphasizes that the massive, chaotic changes of this 2015 to 2029 era were not caused by one person, one single election, or one isolated event.
This is critical.
The text explicitly states that the most important changes stem from long-running trends that have been visible for years, decades even. We're talking about the side effects of globalization, rapid technological innovation, slow geopolitical shifts, demographic changes, and a long, steady decline in trust toward traditional institutions.
And here is the kicker, explicitly stated in the text, impartially analyzing the era. Donald Trump was not the cause of many of these developments. He was often the catalyst that made existing tensions visible.
He didn't build the bomb.
No, he was just the spark that lit the fuse. The gunpowder had been laid down over decades of economic and social shifts.
This raises an important question, which the dossier leaves us with as its ultimate cliffhanger in the core questions section.
Okay, what is it?
It asks, were the events of 2015 to 2029 an exceptional anomaly in American history, a strange, turbulent detour, or did they form the beginning of a long-term worldwide political and geopolitical transformation?
Was it a weird blip that we survived, or was it the prologue to a whole new chapter for humanity?
The text humbly concludes that this is ultimately the question that future generations of historians will have to answer. We are still too close to the blast radius to know for sure.
So what does this all mean for you and me right now? To wrap up this deep dive, I think the scorecard gives us a strange kind of comfort mixed with a very heavy dose of caution. We survived the era.
We did.
The heavy machinery of our institutions held up far better than the doom scrollers predicted. The courts functioned, the dollars cleared. But the world we are left with is fundamentally more complex. It's a crowded boardroom. It's technologically hyper-driven. And the old polite rules of politics have been permanently rewritten by populism.
We must navigate a reality where energy security is paramount, where the geopolitical map is fractured into competing spheres, and where the very concept of truth is mediated by rapidly evolving AI.
Which is actually the perfect tease for our next deep dive. Before we sign off, I want to give you a quick sneak peek at Chapter 18 of the dossier.
Yes.
It pivots away from global and American analysis and focuses specifically on lessons for Europe. According to the short excerpt we have, there are 7 stark realities Europe must face moving forward based on surviving this era.
They are laid out very clearly in the text. 1, democracy is fragile and requires active defense. 2, economic dependence on authoritarian regimes creates massive strategic risks. 3, defense cannot be completely outsourced to the United States.
Right.
4, energy security is national security. 5, disinformation is now a standard strategic weapon. 6, climate policy requires immense political stability to execute. And 7, international cooperation, even in a fractured world, remains absolutely necessary for survival.
We will dive deep into those 7 realities in a future session. But for now, I want to leave you with a final thought to chew on. It's not explicitly written in the dossier, but it is deeply inspired by the laws of physics we just reviewed, specifically Lesson 2 about culture and Lesson 4 about technology.
Yeah.
We established that our political culture changes much faster than our slow-moving institutions, right? The geyser versus the rock.
Yes.
But we also established that our technology changes vastly faster than both of them combined. So if artificial intelligence is going to structurally shape our information supply from here on out, like the text noted happened in 2023, what happens when a technology that evolves, updates, and scales every single month starts directing a political culture that changes every year, while our stabilizing institutions still take decades to adapt?
That is a profound mismatch in velocities.
Exactly. When the software of our society updates daily, but the hardware takes a lifetime to change, will the human system ever be able to catch its breath? It's something to mull over. Until next time, keep questioning your assumptions about the future, because as this scorecard proved, the only guarantee is that the experts are probably at least partially wrong. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.